I think many of you who have gotten to know me over the past few months won't be surprised at all when I tell you this. But my family is and has always been dog people. Dog people. We're dog people. We love dogs. Our dogs are valued and beloved members of the family, and there is nothing anyone could say that would ever convince us otherwise. It's true. But we all know that even the most loving relationships come with their own conflicts, right? When I was young, my father and our family dog, Kenzie, they had one such conflict, one little point of contention between them. You see, our dog, Kenzie, he was a small miniature wire-haired dachshund, only about maybe under 20 pounds. But his small size never seemed to stop him from tipping over the kitchen garbage can and getting into the garbage. This was in the 90s, so it was before we had these like sturdy stainless steel garbage cans with the pedal, the kind that have become popular. So it was pretty common for us day after day to walk into the kitchen and find our family trash, like coffee grounds and used paper towels and snack wrappers just strewn over the kitchen floor. It was pretty annoying to have to keep cleaning it up. And it was also pretty worrisome because we didn't know what he might get into, if it might make him sick, or if he might find something that he would choke on. And so we would try different ways of getting the message through to him, different efforts to train him and teach him not to do this, not to tip over the garbage can. But we kept finding our garbage tipped over onto the floor. My dad specifically had a really hard time dealing with this. He would get so frustrated and angry at Kenzie when this would keep happening. And that was a big deal because my dad and Kenzie just loved each other. They adored each other. And yet, as much as my dad loved our dog, he would often find himself in these moments losing his temper, yelling, just throwing up his hands in frustration. We've all been there, right? He would cry out, "Why won't this dog learn?" It really started to get between them a bit. One day, I came into the kitchen and I saw that the garbage can was now bolted to the wall with a metal band that was around it. My dad had decided that he was just so sick of feeling so frustrated. As much as he wished Kenzie would just learn to stop tipping over the garbage, I think he realized that it might just be easier to take matters into his own hands. He could have really dug his heels in, right? He could have stood his ground, but he decided that his relationship with Kenzie and his own peace of mind were more important. And then after that, we never had any issues with Kenzie and the garbage anymore. I think about this story a lot, and I think about what my dad taught me. When might it be helpful to just bolt the garbage to the wall? To let go of what I think and how I see things, and to find a new way that makes room for the bigger picture of what's important.
Wow. What a couple of weeks we have just experienced. I feel dizzy even recalling it all. Between watching on the news as the protests became an insurrection and violence flooded our nation's capital, the sickening attempts of some lawmakers, even after all of that, to try to negate the democratic will of the voters, the pins and needles results from the Senate runoff races in Georgia, and then the inauguration of a new president and a new vice president. A woman of color. And there were COVID-19 protocols throughout the ceremonies and thousands of National Guard protecting the seat of our federal government from further violent interference. I don't know about you, but I held my breath along with a big portion of our nation this week, and I just began to exhale again. But I haven't even fully let my shoulders down from around my ears. Those of us in the progressive wing of philosophy, religion, or politics, and Unitarian Universalism is indeed a faith firmly rooted in liberal religious tradition. We have a tendency toward open-mindedness, willingness to change, to take on new perspectives, to try on different ideas. This is good. This service is all about the power of flexibility. But before we can be like bamboo and allow ourselves to bend, we need to be firmly planted. The last weeks, year, who are we kidding? Years have felt like being in a storm. The amazing inaugural poet Amanda Gorman said, quote, "We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace." Digging in, knowing our position and our place is very important. Roots are very, very important, especially in a storm. The American historian, activist, and writer Rebecca Solnit recently published an essay on a blog entitled "On Not Meeting Nazis Halfway." She writes about the impulse, particularly among liberals, to try and find common ground, even when compromise would be actively harmful. She said, quote, "Nevertheless, we get this hopelessly naive version of centrism, of the idea that if we're nicer to the other side, then there will be no other side, just one big happy family. The inanity is also applied to the questions of belief and fact and principle, with some muddled cocktail of moral relativism and therapists' every feelings are valid applied to everything." But Solnit writes, "The truth is not some compromise halfway between the truth and a lie, between fact and delusion, between scientists and propagandists. And the ethical is not halfway between white supremacists and human rights activists, rapists and feminists, synagogue massacrists and Jews, xenophobes and immigrants, delusional transphobes and trans people. Who the hell wants unity with Nazis until and unless they stop being Nazis?" The nature of being in a storm is that we try to find safety one way or another. And one risk that we run is the one that Rebecca Solnit points out, that if only we are nicer to the other side, then perhaps there will be no other side. Perhaps we think we could possibly placate the storm itself. But we have observed time and again that this is not a useful tactic. Both-siderism is not the same as open-mindedness. However, the other extreme is that when we find ourselves firmly planted, we can grow rigid. to guard against the storm, we strengthen ourselves, our own positions, we reinforce with more and more assurance of our own correctness and virtue until we cannot bend at all. And this too is a risk. I want to tell you a story about myself that I hope will illustrate one risk of rigidity. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a doctor. I had other fantasies too. Sometimes I said I wanted to own a bakery. Sometimes I said I wanted to be a professional dog walker or a babysitter. And after watching that amazing clip on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood where they visit the crayon factory, I wanted to be a crayon maker too. But those were fleeting, and the desire to be a doctor stuck. It was understandable. I had a lot of experiences in the hospital and with the medical world from a very young age. I knew most human biology concepts better than most folks by about third grade, and I was precocious. I did well in school. It seemed a natural fit. Family members bought me books, doctor kits, costumes. I loved it all. I took a class in high school where we spent 2 hours every day at the hospital shadowing different doctors and nurses. My high school anatomy and physiology teacher signed my yearbook to the most promising future doctor he had ever taught. I started college pre-med. I jumped headlong into organic chemistry and anatomy, physics, and calculus. I loved it. I bought books and I studied in my free time for the MCAT exam. I volunteered in the summers for a children's camp for kids with spina bifida and another one for kids with muscular dystrophy. And it was at one of those camps that I had an experience that's too complicated to explain in the confines of a sermon, but it forced me to realize that I didn't want to be a doctor. I couldn't do it. I remember over the course of a few short weeks before returning for my junior year of college, realizing that I needed to change my major. I would no longer be pre-med. It was, to say the least, shattering. I felt pretty sure that this was the right choice, and of course now in hindsight I feel certain of it, but I had so rigidly clung to that path, that choice, that identity of becoming a doctor, that when I no longer had that to hold on to, it felt like everything slipped away. I experienced a deep depression. A loss of identity can feel like a landslide, like nothing is left except mud. I did, within a year, choose another major somewhat haphazardly, and then I went off to graduate school, but then I decided that really wasn't the best path for me either. But this time I had an easier time shifting gears to go to seminary. When I was in seminary, I became the campus minister for the Unitarian Universalists at the University of Chicago. I hosted worship and social events, service projects for the UU students on campus. And every year, I would see students experience what I had experienced. They would come in on their first week of freshman year and proudly announce their major as if it were handed down by Moses on Mount Sinai. And I would try, often casually over cookies, to encourage the students to be okay exploring a bit. That's what young adulthood is about. They're not required by some ordinance to be exactly certain of their life's path. And usually the students would sort of smile and nod, thinking to themselves, okay, Reverend, whatever. And then a semester or two later, I would find myself consoling them as they decided to change. And their former identity as pre-law or pre-business or whatever it was crumbled around them. Career choices or academic majors are certainly not the only thing that we hold to tightly. Some of us perhaps never did that at all, but instead have held rigid political beliefs our whole lives, or have had to change our parenting philosophy once the reality of real life children crashed into our ideals. Serious illness also has a way of coming into people's lives and upending their understanding of themselves and their roles and their beliefs about the world. Many of us have experienced the loss of religious faith, the recognition that what we once held to be completely infallible is no longer what we believe at all. I had that experience in my early young adulthood too. You perhaps have a different example of something that you held rigidly until it finally broke. This is why the Zen teacher encourages the student to be like bamboo, to find our roots, surely, but also to be willing to be flexible so that we don't snap under the weight of circumstances. As Mark Nepo wrote, quote, "When we trip and fall, we learn soon enough that it is the arm that stiffens and resists that breaks." He continues, "This is not turning the other cheek or submitting to the dominant forces in our lives. Rather, this is meeting the world with feet spread and arms open, neither accepting everything nor rejecting everything, and letting the rest move on through." Neither accepting everything nor rejecting everything, and letting the rest move on through. Unitarian Universalism is a faith of neither accepting everything nor rejecting everything. People often lift up our open-mindedness as proof that you can believe anything you want here. And it's true that we do hold lightly to religious doctrine with a variety of theological beliefs among us, but we're not an anything-goes religion. We are rooted. Our history propels us, and our aspirations, which are currently framed as our seven principles, call us forward into the future. We proclaim clearly and loudly that love is the most powerful motivating force in our world, and that hell is real, but only real here on this world, in this life. And we have a commitment. We have a commitment to fighting against the sinful structures that harm our earth and that separate and diminish human life and potential. To proclaim our principles and values is an act of rootedness. It's an act of holding space and finding grounding in the storms of our world. And I hope that we can do that. But then our faith calls us to bend. To bend. Now, I imagine if you're anything like me, you have found yourself a little extra stiff. Perhaps it's too much news watching or doom scrolling, and it's made your neck tight. Perhaps you've just realized that you've been clenching your jaw for a few weeks or years. Perhaps your thoughts and feelings have worn a predictable groove in your mind, one that tells stories about the other side, and now those circumstances are changing, and that story perhaps is no longer particularly useful. Here's another story from my more recent life. When this pandemic hit, I was really terrified. As I mentioned before, I've had a lot of experience with the medical world. I have pre-existing conditions that made me more susceptible to scary outcomes if I contracted this virus. My husband and I pulled our kids out of daycare. We both began working from home. We limited our social interactions only to our next door neighbors. We ordered groceries for pickup. We washed our hands religiously. I invested in a wide array of masks, and we wore them all the time, especially when we were out in public, which was very rarely. And then last May, I got COVID-19. It was relatively early on, and My symptoms were bizarre and very uncommon. And I was really sick for a few days and then less sick for a few more days. And somehow, miraculously, I had no major complications or long-term side effects. No one really knows why some people experience easier or harder courses of this virus, why some continue to experience symptoms weeks or months later, while other people die and others like me completely recover. But the thing I began to realize was that I felt shame. I had internalized the story that COVID was something that only careless people got, people who cavorted around town and refused to wear a mask. Surely those people are more likely to contract this virus, but COVID-19 is not a test of moral purity. It's a virus. Who knows how I got it? It doesn't really matter. But I had to let go of that story and be flexible enough to realize that everyone is at risk, and it doesn't help to hide my diagnosis. So I shared it in our fellowship's Joys and Concerns and on Facebook. People were surprised. You got COVID? The subtext there was, you've been so careful. You're such a good person. I think we're beginning to realize as time passes that this politicization of this virus is unhelpful in all sorts of ways on both sides of the aisle. Bend. Unclench your jaw. Breathe. What tension are you holding that doesn't serve you? What story have you been repeating that doesn't need to be repeated anymore? What parts of your identity have you been holding on to that are growing too rigid? For many of us, the anxiety, stress, and fight or flight response that we have been living in collectively is going to take quite a long time to ease. The events this past week, while potentially joyful, are not the end. COVID-19 is still ravaging our nation. We still have a broken healthcare system and a cruel immigration system. We need to radically overhaul or defund our police system. White supremacy reared its head in very visible and violent ways recently, but it's more subtle and sometimes dangerous forms are all around us and inside us. Bend. Unclench your jaw. Breathe. Realize, what tension are you holding that doesn't serve you? What story have you been repeating that doesn't need to be repeated anymore? What parts of your identity have you been holding on to that are growing too rigid? I wonder. Our Unitarian Universalist faith calls us to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Responsible, rooted, free, flexible. May we move forward in our lives with both freedom and responsibility, both rooted against the storms and willing to bend rather than break. May it be so. Amen.